I want to know what love is. I want you to show me. Welcome to the Bitter End podcast with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
And today we are here to watch Highlander, Heinz Tomato Ketchup.
No, Todd. It's Highlander, the sauce.
Oh, I was thinking of the wrong sauce.
Yes, you were. This particular sauce is probably about as unhealthy as a jarred packet of a certain name brand Italian sauce that has way too much sugar and salt.
We just watched the trailer for this particular sauce, and that trailer has got way too much sugar and salt in it.
It does. It's also got just way too much green-screened background in it. Fuck me, dude. I've never seen anything with so much green-screened background in it. Just so much that just leaps out and goes, hey, I'm not really here.
Yeah, I mean, right down to the English accents are so forced. They've got a blonde guy like Spike from Buffy, but way shitter.
Yeah, but everyone's like, oh, mate, oh, he's bloody gathering or something, right?
Yeah.
Oh, immortals, I'm fucking swinging a sword around and that.
There's a dude with like sunglasses like Wesley Snipes in Blade. There's like the planets are aligning. They've got to do something. I tell you what is probably not in this film is the one thing that I was certain would be in it. I thought that this film was going to be all about the origin of the immortals, ignoring Zeist. Doesn't seem like that at all.
I don't know. Well, maybe we could still get it. I mean, having said that, you've just described, like a Highlander film which has Blade fighting Spike from Buffy. Sounds okay to me.
Sounds all right.
I had to, like, so I don't really know what's going on, but, like, there's alignment of the planets. It still looks like there's fucking shit tons of immortals knocking around. This film is following on from Highlander Endgame. So Christopher Lambert, our big boy, Connor McLeod, is dead. We've got Duncan McLeod, who is the star of the Highlander TV series. So I imagine we're going to be kind of continuing that area of the franchise.
Which is a big blind spot for you and me because we have still not watched the TV show.
No,
probably
idea.
Never will.
I would put money down saying that I never will. So other than like the glaring CGI backgrounds, the one thing I thought about this is that the baddie looks pretty cool.
He's like a big kind of...
He's like a bit like Kurgan-esque in that he's like this 7-foot-tall monster.
He's like a barbarian.
He's like a barbarian. He's like white as a ghost with this weird kind of like metal skull cap. And yeah, he looks very otherworldly. Like, you know, when... in the Highlander-verse of, like, just loads of dudes in raincoats, he stands out. So hopefully that will be good.
Yeah.
I mean, time will tell very shortly, but Todd...
Yeah.
Would you like to guess about how good this film may or may not be with the IMDb game?
That is all I want to do.
This is Highlander, Your Mum's Special Sauce, released in September 2007. So Highlander, The Search for Vengeance, the anime one, also came out in 2007 in June of that year.
A few months difference.
Yeah, so they just, I don't know why they really felt like people have waited 7 years and then two Highlander films have got to come along at once. Hit me, brah. What do you think this rate's at?
Well, I feel like Highlander films need a little bit of time to stew for people.
Like sauce.
Yeah. And I feel that they'll all come out the gate fairly lukewarm, but then over time, as people grow to love them, the scores will go up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, crucially, chronologically, this is the last Highlander film.
Yes.
This is the last one at the moment as of, what are we, May 2016?
Mm-hmm.
This is the last one we're getting. Although it's not the last episode of this franchise because me and Tom are going to go back and watch the renegade version of Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Because we're fucking idiots.
Yeah. I was going to say because we're double hard bastards.
That as well. I mean, well, time will tell.
So because this film is the last one released, it's had the least time to stew. I believe it's also direct to TV for the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, I don't know if it was originally intended to come out as a cinematic release and then ended up coming and then that's just where it ended up going.
But that adds an extra element to my guessing game because surely the only people that would watch this film, that would seek it out, are people that love the TV show and would therefore probably feel quite good about it.
Mm.
I'm going to say 5.5.
Dark times are coming, buddy. 3.1.
3.1?
Yeah.
Tom, is this the lowest rated film we have ever watched for The Bitter End?
I believe it is. That is some weak sauce.
Oh, Tom. No.
We're going to feel really good about watching the Renegade version after
this. I don't want to talk.
Well, tough shit, buddy, because we're going in. See you on the other side, folks. Bye.
No, Tom. No.
No?
No.
Don't tell me no.
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 It's not the best sauce I've ever had.
No.
No. Highlander.
No.
Come on now. Get it together.
No.
No. So how do you feel about the film?
No.
No.
I don't feel anything anymore, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm completely dead inside. I'm numb.
Yeah.
I'm numb, Tom.
We have now gotten to the end of the Highlander timeline. And I don't know, is it like they say, like when you're doing like a marathon that like, you know, like that the last mile or whatever is, I think I'm just making this up. What I'm trying to say is they didn't go out on a bang.
No.
No.
They didn't.
They went out on a no. This is how you do. No! No, film!
Yeah, rolled up newspaper, hit it on the nose. No!
Mm.
Bad film. Bad film.
I will say, actually, there are things in this film that I like, but you know what they add up to? No!
No! No!
Right, so we've watched The Source.
Yeah, now I don't want to come across all negative.
Yeah, there was actually, we were listing off, and I was like, you know what I like? I like this bit. I like that. I like that. Put it all together and it's a bad sauce.
It's a big old pile of no.
It's a stanky sauce.
I think it might be fun before we get into the plot, because if we get into the plot straight off the bat, the listeners are going to go, no.
No.
They're going to pull their headphones off, throw them on the floor.
Stamp on their phone.
Yeah.
And go, be like, no.
So let's go in, let's treat him with a little bit of honey before we give him the vinegar.
Yeah.
Right? So let's take it in turns to each say a thing that we like about the film.
Mm.
Okay, very small, limited detail.
Okay.
I'm going to start with, I like the fact that it's got a bunch of cannibals in it for no reason, yet you literally never see them eat anyone. Just everybody says that they're cannibals.
Yep. I really like the baddie in it.
Yeah, he's good. Let's keep going in terms and see how long it takes for us to run out of things that we like.
Yeah.
I like the fact that they tried to make loads of nods to the original Highlander film, even though they really, really didn't have to because it was so long ago.
Yeah. I like that the film is set in a future where everything's looking a lot like Highlander 2.
Yeah. I like the fact that I think I'm out. Oh no, there's a couple of good bloody deaths in it. There's a few good sort of throat-slitting deaths.
There are.
This is a good game. Who can
pull? Yeah, I don't know. I might have to pull out first. Because now if I was going to say that I like things, it's like I'm liking this because it was terrible.
Yeah.
And I don't think that counts.
We're out of good stuff.
We're out of good, legitimately good things.
Oh, I liked the slug bro. Ooh. There's a big prosthetic slug man.
Yeah.
He was good.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, I think that might be it. I also like the line, "Do it, you immortal fuck."
That's a good line. And I like the fact that watching this film has brought me and you closer together, Tom.
Mm.
I like that.
Yeah. I enjoyed the beer we were drinking while watching the film, but
good.
I don't think that really had any... I don't think that the film was responsible for that.
No.
So, anyway...
What is this film about?
The film starts with bullet points.
It starts with the rules. It's, oh my God, guys. Sorry, we really need a moment. Like, we need a moment because this is just all over the fucking shop. The film starts with text on the screen, yeah. Bullet points.
Yeah. Immortals, colon.
These are the rules. It starts with rules corner.
Yeah. Amazing.
and there's only three rules, and which are not necessarily the rules
are, like, immortals can only die if they have their heads chopped off. When you kill another immortal, you gain their powers, and immortals cannot have babies.
Yeah, and that last one is delivered as if it is the single most important thing.
Yeah, because it is, basically. It later turns out. So basically, this film is set in the future. They don't say, like, what year, but basically the world has kind of descended into chaos, as it always seems to do.
Yeah. Do you think that this film could in any way sit in the same timeline as Endgame or anything like that? It doesn't directly contradict it, or does it? I don't think it does. It actually could be a kind of a follow-on sequel, this one, couldn't it?
I mean, that's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, have they finally pulled off a sequel that doesn't contradict any of previous films?
Only that it doesn't contradict a film that did contradict the previous films.
Yeah.
So by that, it's complicit.
Yes.
Contradicting. So still no.
No!
But basically, we're in the future. A lot of this film is set in Eastern Europe.
Yes, it was filmed in Lithuania.
Okay. And basically, like, we get this shot saying, like, and there's this narration, and it's like, oh, the world has descended into chaos, the usual stuff. They show you this by, like, everything is derelict and, like, crumbling buildings. The sky is like a burning flame red, much like the shield in Highlander 2. And, like, you just get instant shots of just people in the street just all stabbing each other.
Yeah.
Which is fucking
fun. It's just total chaos.
Yeah, and basically what's happening is they're talking about, like, Connor is... no, it's not Connor. Fuck, it's not Connor. Duncan.
Little personality-less Duncan.
Yeah, he's basically walking along all the rooftops like he is Ben Affleck in Daredevil.
Right.
Everything's red filter as fuck, and he's, like, looking all broody and horrible.
He's spying on his ex-girlfriend.
Yes, his ex-wife.
Anna.
Yes, Anna.
Who is our narrator.
She's the narrator, and she is talking about that the immortals believe there's something called the Source, which is, like, some sort of mystical thing that will bring peace to the world.
It's a bit like the prize in the first film, in that all the immortals know about it. Mm. They all want it, but none of them know actually what it is.
No one really knows what it is, but not all of them believe in it.
Like, it's a fairy tale.
Yeah, Duncan doesn't believe in it.
No.
And then we see there's, like, this other immortal whose name is Sai, who is searching for clues as to where the source is. And he finds out what is going on, and then he has a Skype chat with his mates. You've got Reggie, who is this British geezer, isn't it? Who looks a bit like he's off to a Sum 41 gig.
He's unbearable.
Yeah, I feel quite offended at how British people have been portrayed.
I'm immortal.
Yeah. And Giovanni, who is the guy who looks like Spike from Buffy, but, like, is an utter tool.
He's got Crispin Glover's face. He's got Spike from Buffy's hair. He's supposed to be from Rome, from the Vatican.
Yeah,
he's the least Italian man in history.
Yeah, he's super, like, religious. And then this guy called Mythos, who I think was in the TV show, possibly. I think he was in the last film. And they're having this Skype chat with Sai about that they found out, a lead on how to find the source. And they need to go to this monastery. And, like, the reason that, like, they want to find the source, because it's, like, the planets are all aligning.
Yeah.
And is when the planets align, the source will happen. Literally, it says that the planets have come out of their orbit.
Yeah.
Like, this is completely defying all physics, coming out of their orbit. And, like, this is something that Reggie's saying to Mythos, and Mythos just says, oh, that's probably just a bit of an orbital wobble.
Like, I think orbital wobble's an actual thing.
Is it an actual thing?
I think it
is. If it is, then they could have picked a better name for it. That sounds so stupid.
But then...
And this thing, like, there's meant to be 3 days until the world gets exposed, like, this massive thing of cosmic radiation from...
Oh, I forgot about that.
This is, like, a real high-stakes thing. Like, in 3 days, the world is going to be destroyed by cosmic radiation. It's mentioned once, and nobody ever... brings up again or like acts with any kind of sense of urgency, which is really weird to happen in the film. And then the other thing about this planetary alignment is that you can see all of the planets with your naked eye just by looking up at the planets are hanging in the sky lower than the moon.
Yeah, you could reach out and touch them.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because they're out of their orbits though. They're that much closer.
If they were that much closer, then the Earth's gravity would go to fucking shit, probably.
I mean, maybe it does.
Well,
they
fucking
jump around.
No. This was the bit that, but like every time anyone looked at the sky and saw all the planets nearing alignment, I was just like, ugh. The other thing that really ground my gears is just like the green screen. I know I mentioned it before.
Everything is green screened. Everything.
Unacceptable. It is unacceptable green screen. Like you can see like the flaming sky where they've taken some pictures of clouds and they filtered it red. And then you can see the skyline that they've injected in front of it. And then you can see the stock like clip animation fire that someone has stuck on the roof of a building. And it's just like cut and paste backgrounds.
The green screen, when you see Giovanni on the Skype chat, he's in the Vatican in Rome, and they green screen him standing in a room of the Vatican.
Yeah.
They could have just built a set, like, it's just a room set with a couple of crucifixes
in it. They could have just, you know, gone on location to a church for a day. It didn't have to be in the fucking Vatican.
Like, someone's just finished their green screen degree and is just trying to bulk out their showreel.
Fuck.
It's ridiculous.
So, but... what happens as a result of the alignment and the source kind of is going to happen is the Guardian awakens.
Yes.
Now, he is the big bad, and he's awesome.
He's so good.
He's pretty hilarious. He's kind of like, he is like a mix between the Kurgan and Kane, and then...
a little
Kel.
Bit of, and Kel.
He's got that very, like, just, like, mad dialogue, like Kel has.
Really, really, really wacky lines out of him. Very eccentric delivery.
Yes.
He comes out the gate with a really cool look, which, unfortunately, he loses quite quickly.
Oh,
afterwards.
It's so good.
But he's got this kind of, you know, pyramid head from the Silent Hill games. He's got this, like... crazy big helm, pointed helmet on.
He's got like a dog collar on to stop him from getting his neck cut.
Yeah, it's like a reverse version of when a dog gets put in the cone of shame, those like plastic cones to stop them biting. He's got that, but it's like backwards. It goes back so that nothing can get to his neck and chop it off, which is a great idea.
And then
all immortals should have that.
And then he also is kind of cross between that and the Humongous from Mad Max. Yeah. So he's great. The only thing is that he moves around in like super speed. So everything he does kind of looks a little bit like a Benny Hill sketch.
Yeah, every time he moves, it's sped up. And it's just hilarious.
And he says really wacky things. It's also a bit like maybe like he's like really took his cues from Jim Carrey in The Mask or something like that.
I'm the Guardian. Duncan MacLeod. You have squandered your precious gift! You could have ruled the world! And you pissed it away. This is the end of time!
Like, at any point, he could just go smoking!
He really could. Anyway, so the Guardian, who me and Tom have a real kind of bit of a crush on, he shows up while Sai's in the middle of his Skype chat with his mate. By the way, the password for him to lock into this private Skype chat is "there can be only one," which is the worst password ever. I hope he at least replaced the word one with the number one and like did some up and down, like lowercase.
Exclamation mark at the end.
Yeah. But yeah, so the Guardian turns up and he's like, "Nah, mate, You're not going to find the source because I am the guardian of the source. So
now you're dead.
Yeah.
Let's have a sped up fight scene and then you will die.
They have a pretty feeble fight scene.
Yeah.
But it ends in like a pretty good death, pretty good decapitation.
Mm.
Poor Sai, he's not in the film much.
No. And so then what happens is the gang get together. So you get Giovanni, Reggie, Mythos,
Joe,
who is in Endgame.
Yeah, he's like one of the Watchers.
Yeah.
He's a human.
Yeah. Anna and Duncan.
Yes.
They
Anna's human as well, it should be pointed out. She was married to Duncan but left him because she wanted a baby.
Yes.
And he couldn't give her one.
Yeah, but he has been like following her around in the shadows. Duncan MacLeod in this is just a mopey shitbag. Basically, he like it is such a flat performance in just like every way. Like any bits where he's meant to kind of like really kind of like try and sell a scene, he just does not.
No,
he just looks kind of like really dour the whole time. And like everyone's going on about like sort of like, you're the best of us, Duncan. Yeah, oh my God, you're so incorruptible. Oh, it's always gotta be you. Oh, you're my best friend. And it's kind of like, nah.
Yeah.
No. So
every time someone says something nice to Duncan, he's just like, yeah, no.
Yeah, I'm brilliant.
So they all get together anyway, basically, because they've had this partial Skype call with Sai, and they're like, Sai was onto something with the source. He's given us the location of a monastery that we should go to. And the Guardian is back. And of course, we all know who the Guardian is. We thought he was just a fairy tale. And so with the Guardian hot on their heels to try and find the source before the Earth is bathed in cosmic radiation, they go to this monastery. And they, what do? How do they get into the monastery? They ram a car through the door and just smash the door down with a jeep.
Yeah.
And then they walk into the back of the monastery and Slugbro is there.
Yeah.
Now, he is the elder of the monks. They're like, where's your elder? They're like, we don't got no elder. And then they look in the back room and they're like, who's this really old dude? Oh, what, that elder? And he's so old that he's been alive since before time was counted. Mm. He's like the oldest of the oldest of the oldest. And he's cursed. He is an immortal, but he's been cursed with it's the curse of decay. So
he's just rotten as shit.
Yeah, not like a corpse or like a zombie. He's just kind of gone a bit like putrid. He's like melty.
Yeah.
He looks like a slug.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
He's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like Slug Bro.
Yeah, it's quite jarring. It's quite like, whoa, this is a weird thing to see in a Highlander thing, but yeah. I'll take it.
Especially because, like, all of the effects in this film are so, like, CGI-y. They're all so digital. And Slug Bro is just latex.
Yeah.
Just latex and Vaseline.
But just very dimly lit to kind of, like, cover up probably all the bits that aren't done so well. And he lays down the story of the source, like, about before time began, that there were all these immortals and they travelled to find the source.
Because there was another alignment. It was the last time it happened. It was so long ago. Yeah. It was in, like, a million years BC.
Yeah. And they went back and, like, you know, some of them killed each other and they found the source and there was a guardian there.
A different guardian.
And basically, like, it's like the Slugbro managed to reach the source, but apparently the source was not meant for him.
Yeah, you are not the one.
He is not the one. And so he was then cursed to be a Slugbro. And then the guy who is the new guardian, he killed the old guardian. And he was not meant to receive the source. And so his curse was to become the guardian.
The new guardian, to take up the mantle.
I think there was a woman there who, and she did get to the, she did reach it. It might have even been like played by the same woman who plays Anna.
But they don't address it.
They don't really.
Not even at the end.
They don't really say what that meant. I think it just basically meant that the world wasn't destroyed by cosmic rays.
Mm. It's worth noting at this point what the source looks like. So they keep talking about the source, which I kept expecting was going to be like, oh, this is going to be like the origin of the Immortals in a world without Planet Zeist. Mm. And according to what I've read on the internet, that's what the original director, who was the original guy who directed Highlander 1 and 2, was originally signed on for this. He wanted it to be about the origin of the Immortals. He wanted it to be set thousands of years before the first film as a prequel, with and to only have Duncan MacLeod in it at the beginning and end as a little bookend. But then the studio were like, no, and we need Duncan in it all the way through. Ugh. And so this guy was like, okay, well, that's not my film then. I'm not going to do it. And so they've come up with this instead. So in this, so the source, it's nothing to do with the origin of the Immortals. No. Nothing. It's just a blue light in the middle of the desert. It's like a perpetual quickening.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, in this little crater that looks like an upside down mushroom.
Yeah. They never explain it. Like, don't be expecting at the end of this podcast, me and Tom are going to go, and the source is...
Yeah, or like what that has to do with the immortal, you know, like
nothing.
Any reason why the Immortals are around and they have this weird set of rules. No, we still don't know.
It's just this blue light that burns in the desert, but only when the planets line up.
Yeah. So basically, they have another fight with the Guardian.
Yeah, Slugbro tells them
where to go, where to go to find the source.
And he warns them that the closer they get to the source, the weaker they will become.
Yes. To the point that they will become mortal.
Yes.
And then the Guardian kills Joe. Duncan's very sad, while everyone here in the real world doesn't give a flaming fuck.
Here's my impression of Duncan when he's really sad. It's a bit sad.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, and he's like, you were my best friend, Duncan. And then when he said that, I don't know why, but I just expect him to be like, you're my best friend. And my favourite colour is blue. and my favourite day of the week is Friday. And it's kind of like, that's the kind of thing you say, you know, when you're five, like, you're my best friend. My favourite colour's green this week. It was just kind of like, I don't know, Joe, say something grown up before you die, for God's sake. So they chuff on over to go and find the source.
Yeah.
It's on this little island somewhere in just the nebulous region of Eastern Europe.
They work it out. You know that massive ocean that's in the middle of Eastern Europe? Yeah, it's an island in the middle of that.
Yeah.
It's because when the planets are lining up, right?
Yeah.
Because this makes sense.
Yeah.
They're lining up to point at
this island.
Now, that would work if all other planets were smaller than Earth to be able to point.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure Earth is quite a small planet relative to a lot of these.
Yeah, because they look fucking massive because you can see them with the naked eye.
So they do a very good job of pinpointing exactly where it is. Oh, we forgot something. Mm. Slugbro does a thing where he touches Anna, the human woman's forehead, and is like, now the source will call you to it. So she knows where the source is wanting them to go.
Yeah, she's
but
integral.
But in a really useless way. So she like looks up at the sky
and
goes,
compass.
She goes, I can see water. We have to cross water. And then their mate, who actually has a computer and could look up where the planets are pointing, goes, yeah, it's pointing to this island. She's right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's like, couldn't the guy have just... She didn't need to tell them that.
Yeah.
It wasn't the clue of crossing water that made him think, ooh, maybe I'll look at a map.
I mean, the clue of crossing water is not great in on a planet that is over 50% water.
Yeah.
It's like, could you narrow it down? It'll be beneath the sky. Fuck.
Yeah, they're all so in awe of everything she says. It really grinds my gears.
Yeah. So basically, they chuff on over to this island.
Oh, and when they get there, it's full of cannibals.
It's full of cannibals,
but they're
because
weird
reasons.
Cyberpunk cannibals with tattoos on their heads. They're in like leather jackets, and they swing chains around, and they laugh a lot, and they do not ever eat anybody.
Yeah,
not on camera anyway.
Yeah, they fight them.
They're just like, oh no, cannibals. They've got a businessman in a suit trapped in a big pile of tires, and they're gonna burn him, not eat him. No, they've just poured some petrol on
him. When are they gonna cook
him?
The tires are for flavour.
Okay.
And then they kill these cannibals, and then you hear this really horrible cover of a Queen song.
It's that one that goes, I am immortal, from the first. It's so awful. But this cover is like an Iron Maiden style. Like,
the music in this film is dire. It's really bad.
It is very poor. It is very poor.
But then, so that happens. They jog on a bit more. The Guardian shows up again, kills Reggie. Everyone's happy about that. There's a mercifully brief sex scene.
Yeah, that's quite important about them killing Reggie, because by this point they realise that once on the island, because they're now close to the source, none of them are immortal anymore. They're so all mortal now.
They bung him in the back of the car and drive on, and they just expect him to come back to life. And after a while they go, uh-oh.
It's interesting because it's Search for Vengeance rules. It's like unlike with the previous films, they do seem to experience death. You know, they were like, when Reggie gets killed by the Guardian, he's lying on the floor and he says, I always hate this part, but I'll see you in a minute. And then he dies. Yeah. And they're all like, bosh him in the car or come back to life while we're driving. But he doesn't come back to life.
Yes. So then there's kind of a bit more with the cannibals.
Yeah, the cannibals catch up with them in the woods and like ambush them, tie them up. Mm. And definitely don't eat them. They just tie them up and then have a big rave.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to eat them later. First, let's rave and not have anyone on guard. So at which point, the Guardian shows up, doesn't kill anybody.
He lets Anna free.
Yeah, I don't know why he wants Anna to go to the source. I don't understand why he's like, well, she's cool.
He keeps saying, it's everything about Anna. It's all about her. But this never comes to anything.
Yeah, well, I just don't understand. I don't know, there's a lot that isn't explained. And then basically, like, Giovanni escapes and he leaves Duncan and Mythos strung up. And he's like, it's me, God has chosen me to be the only one. So he's kind of gone a little bit bad or a little bit crazy.
He's a total dick. But he's got this crucifix around his neck, which is secretly a knife, which is kind of cool. And he uses that to escape.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And then everybody, basically, they all escape.
There's a really cool bit where they're trying to get away from the cannibals, and one of the head cannibals on a motorbike, Mythos throws his sword and it sticks in a tree just before the guy riding the motorbike is about to ride past it.
Yeah.
So he rides his motorbike along in such a way that the sword in the tree cuts his head off.
Yeah, that's some Friday the 13th shit.
Yeah!
Right there.
Yeah, boy!
Yeah.
I've gone from no to yeah!
Giovanni gets killed.
Can't remember, like, quite lame.
The Guardian just lops his head off. That's good.
Standard.
Mythos says to Duncan, "You're the best man ever. You're the one." At which point we go, "No."
Yeah. Duncan goes, "Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, whatever. I don't want. I'll do it on the night." And then he goes to find. He finds like the upside down mushroom where the source is. And fights the Guardian.
Fights the Guardian.
And then the Guardian's like, don't you feel the speed? Feel the power? Because like now that he's near the source, and the planets are aligning about 10 feet away from them, he's now got the really jarring super speed that the Guardian has. And so it goes really... They just really need to drop the fucking Benny Hill music in here. Because it takes all the tension out of the fight by just making it look ridiculous. It's just daft.
And then the way that Duncan defeats the Guardian is as daft as anything. They're fighting. Duncan hits, parries his swords, you know, like ka-ching, 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 and he keeps doing it.
Spinning and a circle around him.
Every time he knocks the Guardian back, so he spins around, hits him, spins around, hits him, spins around. He does it so many times, so quickly, that the Guardian spins around like a corkscrew and drives himself into the ground.
Yeah.
This is some Bugs Bunny shit.
Yeah, totally.
And then he's just stuck in the ground, like, uh-oh.
At which point he says, "Do it, you immortal fuck." And then Duncan's like, "No, I'm not bothered."
No, bothered.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm done with this. I'm not going to do it.
And that is what makes him worthy of the source.
Yes.
The fact that he chose, because it is not a test of strength, but a test of purity.
Yeah, so he was like, "No, I don't want to kill him. I'm bored." And so then, yeah, like the Guardian kind of like vanishes.
His head explodes.
Oh yeah, he explodes. That's pretty cool.
It's all right.
That's all right. It'll do. And then, so you think like, okay, cool. Like the film is nearly done. We then basically have a flashback to all of the film.
It flashes back the entire film.
To the very beginning of the film, it flashes back with another monologue by Anna.
To the point that I was worried something had gone wrong with the DVD and it had, like, skipped back to the start.
Yeah, because it starts really similar to the one at the beginning of the film, about, like, talking about the source and about Duncan MacLeod and people searching for the source. And just showing flashbacks to all these scenes that we just don't need to see again, because, like, some of them, yeah, you know, I only saw that scene 80 minutes ago. I only saw that scene 3 minutes ago. I do not need to see it again. And then basically what it turns out is that what the source has granted them, it's like, oh, there could be only one. But what that actually means is that they could have a baby.
And so, like, it's our gift to the world.
Yeah, it's like, which kind of like has some weird kind of like, you know, like messiah kind of shit.
Yeah, every other immortal had to die in order for Duncan to be able to have a baby.
But we don't even know if they did all die, because Mythos, we don't see him die. He just rides off.
Yeah.
Like, he draws the cannibals away, but you don't know that he died. And the other thing is, you don't know. There might be loads of other immortals still out there.
Yeah.
With it. So
what a rip-off.
So it basically just means that basically they have a baby and the film finishes with, like, blinding white light, and then, like, Duncan and Anna with their shirts off just hugging each other and looking really chuffed with each other.
Yeah.
And then
she goes, I feel life.
Yeah, and then you get, like, a close-up of a CGI fetus.
Yeah.
And then the film finishes with a song that's kind of like that sings about, I'm going back to the sauce.
Take me back to the sauce. Take me back to the prime.
And at which point, you know, me and Todd look at each other and start evaluating our lives a bit more seriously. And that is the end of the Highlander timeline thus far.
Do you know what's weird? I did not feel a disadvantage for not having seen the TV show at all.
No, but I felt that, so with, like, characters like Giovanni and Reggie, I felt that they were being introduced as though people would know who they were.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're in the TV show. So it was just kind of like, that's not how you, they don't set up, the characters are new characters. They don't set them up in a way that you would really effectively set up a character in a film.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even, like, the bits where, you know, you've got, like, Joe and stuff like that, who obviously must be, like, quite a core character of the TV show. When this film came out, the TV show had been done for, like, nearly 10 years. So even then, it's kind of like, you know, this is, like, you know, you don't have streaming and stuff like that. And, like,
yeah,
I don't know, can you...
Was it fresh in people's minds? But, like, did it? But the point is, I don't think it mattered if it was fresh in people's minds.
No, no, it still would have been bad.
Well,
I mean, it is definitely bad.
It is the lowest rated film we have ever watched for this podcast.
Yeah, and it is one of the worst films, I feel like, that we have watched. Although that said, there was a lot of cool bits in it. So yeah, like I said, I liked the kind of like the post-apocalypse setting. I think that can work for Highlander. I liked the bad guy. I liked the fact that there was like a gang of good guy immortals.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like, you know, a ragtag band. I liked that, but I just don't think that those things were like funneled into a good story.
Yeah, I think there's just a few small changes that would need to be made to make this film work. Like, it's not unsalvageable. I mean, it is now, it's nearly 10 years old.
Mm.
But you know, first things first, sorry, Mr. Adrian Paul, you're not a strong enough lead. Get rid of Duncan MacLeod, bring in Connor, bring in Lambchop.
Yeah, I mean, he is not a strong enough lead, but then I don't even feel like he has that many lines in the film.
No,
I don't know who, the star of this film is.
But just a little bit of Lambchop throughout, that would have really, really helped carry it.
Couldn't they have just, like, Ramirez'd him back?
Yeah, well, they should have done, exactly. Yeah. So you do that will fix it. Second thing you fix is the fucking editing, man. Less of this weird artificial high speed stuff. Just a bit of pacing. Just a little bit of pacing, guys.
Just make it a film.
Give it room to breathe.
Don't put horrible music on it. Don't, like, yeah, just don't.
You ditch the green screen, don't need it.
Yeah, just get a set.
And then the last thing that I think would really save the film, slightly controversial, it's the name, right? Name's confusing. You call it The Source, you expect it to be about the origin of the Immortals. So this MacGuffin, this thing that everybody's chasing, don't call it The Source, because that's not what it is. Call it something else. Call it anything you want. Call it The Nutsack, right? Highlander, The Nutsack. And then Duncan MacLeod and all his mates are going out to this island to try and find The Nutsack. And then they get there and it's this big blue light and it lets him have a baby. Cool. That's fine. That's good. No confusion there. None of this. Well, what does that have to do with the origin of the Immortals? Nothing. It's The Nutsack.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Highlander, The Sperm Bank.
Yeah.
They went, you know.
That's all you need. And that is a fixed film right there. Just saved you millions of dollars.
Yeah. Maybe we could go into business as Highlander consultants for the reboot.
I feel like that's a lucrative industry.
Yeah. Gotta be pulling in some of that Highlander money.
Tom, I wonder if now is a good time for us to poke our little noses into Rules Corner and blow away some of those cobwebs.
Let's do it.
Rules Corner.
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 Okay, so rules wise in this, so obviously the addition of The Source is quite a big new rule, and the fact that, like, this, I don't know, it is just like a fucking MacGuffin,
yeah,
isn't it? Like, but the cool thing about it is where they start to get, where they become mortal as they get near it, and I don't think they really made enough of that, because if you've been immortal for like hundreds of years or thousands of years in the case of like mythos, like what, like the stakes should feel high as fuck.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
what I mean,
absolutely. You'd just panic, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
well, unless some of them are a bit like, I'm sick, I just want to end it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel that that was like, that was a cool rule that was like maybe missed. Like they could have been more done with it. But the other thing is that, like, Reggie says that he's like about 300 years old, making him like the youngest immortal.
Yeah.
Thus far, which just is kind of, this is like the thing that's really bugged me with this is, like, you know, like in like going way back, like to the first one, that the idea of the gathering, that there's no explanation given as to why there are immortals. And we know they are unlocked by a violent death. So they were saying that there can only be one. But why should we assume that... Why should there only be one? Because it seems as though they keep on coming. It wasn't like there was... There's no reason as to, like... And the immortals are here because of... Blah, 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 blah.
It's not one bloodline or anything.
Yeah, there's not. Yeah,
just they randomly just get born at some point.
Yeah, yeah. There's
like two mortals will give birth to an immortal.
Yeah, it's not like there was like, yeah, like some sort of like reason they were chosen or like a curse or just anything. So it just, it really bugs me because it's just kind of like, well, I'm the only one. It's like, maybe I'm not. Someone's just had a baby and maybe they're going to be immortal if they get in a car crash or something like.
I have a question for you about Reggie, actually, as a Highlander consultant currently sat in Rules Corner.
Okay, I'm on the clock, though. This is going to cost you.
Send me an invoice.
Yeah.
Reggie, at one point, says a line, something to the effect of, oh, I'm starving. Can't we get something to eat? Can't we get a roast chicken?
Yes.
I have a question for you. Do immortals need to eat?
No, I don't think they do, because Cain was in that cave for 400 years.
Okay, so he must have been ravenous when he came out.
Yeah, maybe he just likes to eat. Maybe it reminds him of his mortal self.
Okay, so they do get... So whether or not they can starve to death, they can get hungry.
Yeah.
Now...
I did notice, I was thinking like, okay.
So this brings to mind... This is a really silly point.
Yeah.
But while Cain was in that cave...
Yeah.
Would the cave have... Was he in there for like 400 years or something? Would the cave have just filled up with poo?
No, because they only must have had a finite amount of food in there.
Okay.
Suddenly
popped into my head. Because if they live forever, eventually they'll just fill up the planet.
Get your head out of the gutter, Jordan. You are a Highlander consultant, and you'll treat the franchise with the respect it deserves and has earned.
That is what I'm doing.
Yes, I think you are treating it with the reverence of which it deserves.
and Colonel MacLeod of the Clan MacLeod, and unfortunately, I filled the highlands of Scotland with my own feces. To the north of England!
Oh dear, Tom, okay. I've broken.
Okay. Let's calm it down, buddy. I think what you need, what I need, and the good people listening at home need, is a little bit of story time.
All right, let's just all simmer down, yeah? Let's just simmer down.
Get your head out of the gutter. Has Gary Kilworth written something about fucking Conor MacLeod? The Kurgan going and laying down a meaty log.
Okay, guys.
This is a thing that happened when we were watching Friday the 13th, where we would watch these films, and when they were getting like so kind of like bad, that we would just kind of like say terrible things to each other and just be like, these films are turning us into bad people. This is the point that Highlander turned us into bad people. I'm very sorry, everybody, for the dip in decorum that the Bitter End podcast is known for.
Guys, it's been a long season. Mm. Okay, so getting serious now. I've done up my tie. And here we are in story time, which is the feature where I read from Highlander, There Can Be Only One, the novelization of the first Highlander film by Mr. Gary Kilworth. I'm very worried about the safety of Mr. Kilworth because he has not responded to any of my messages to speak to him for this podcast. I can only hope that he is alive and well. I'm sending him all my well wishes and,
Godspeed,
and continuing
Gary.
To get in touch with him. I will read today a small section from very near the end of the book, because we're near the end of the season. This is from page 291. And this, Tom, I think you'll enjoy, as it is a little reflection from the Kurgan about his past, about his childhood.
Ooh, okay.
The Kurgan, our potential favourite villain of all time. Mm. Here we go, dipping now into story time with Toddly T. The Kurgan had many old memories that had hardened under the suns of many days. His first was from when he was 5 years old. His father, not wishing to feed him anymore, had dashed his head against a stone and left him with a split skull for the wolves and bears. He had recovered, of course, within a few hours. He had followed his father's tracks along the edge of the hills to his camp. He waited until his father was asleep that night, and then crept out and took one of the hot stones from the edge of the fire. He carried it in the fork of a stick, and it was still so hot that it burned through the bark. His father used to sleep with his mouth open because of a nasal blockage. The young Kurgan dropped the red-hot pebble into his father's mouth. The shepherd could not dislodge the stone. It burned into the soft flesh in his throat and stuck there, choking him to death. His son took his sheep down the hillside to the farm the next day and told his mother that a bear had attacked his father and killed him. When he was 12, he left home to join a group of bandits who preyed on caravans crossing the steppes between India and the Mediterranean. He became proficient with the slingshot and would stand on an outcrop picking off individual members of the merchant trains, thinning down their number before an all-out attack. At 25, his physical deterioration ceased and his bodily characteristics remained stable. He realized then that not only could he not be killed by a normal sword or arrow wound or by a blow, but that he would not grow old. The aging process had been arrested. And thus ends story time with Toddly T.
I like a bit of backstory on the Kurgan. That was good. Grim way to kill his dad.
Yeah, he was 5 years old.
I know. And I just liked that, like, I like the nasal blockage line.
It's very important to have that in there. Otherwise, why else would his father's mouth be open?
Yeah.
No one opens their mouth for any reason other than a nasal blockage, Tom.
Yeah. But yes, good bit of, like, so, because this is, like, because I bought you this book as a gift. How have you been finding it as a
Mate,
read?
Genuinely a good old time. My favourite bits of it, 100% of the bits that aren't in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So bits like that, because the bits that are in the film are so faithful as to be just like you are watching the film.
Yeah.
So I've really enjoyed it. I think from what I can tell of Gary Kilworth's work, he does a lot of like fantasy, like original fantasy fiction. I think this is the only like novelization that he's done.
Mm.
So it's obviously just some gig that he got at some point to pay the bills, which I totally respect. And I'm not in any way mocking the book because I think
conservatory put in his house for that.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think he seems like a cool guy, and it's like a cool written book. Like that scene I just read to you, that's pretty gnarly. I wish that was in the film.
Yeah, no, that's like from like the one from the last episode was tight when it was like fighting the Caligula.
The Caligulas, yeah.
Stuff.
So I will reveal a little preview. The story time in the next episode is going to be the final pages of the book.
Oh, okay. So something to tune in for next time, people. Because I think that's kind of us.
Yeah. So it is interesting that if it wasn't for the interesting nature of Highlander 2, The Quickening, where there are these two conflicting versions of it that exist...
Mm.
This would be the end of our season. We'd be ending right now.
Yeah.
We ended season one by saying, okay, we're going to watch Highlander. 6 films.
Yeah.
Then we came 7. Into the start of season two by going, oh, actually it's 7 because we forgot about The Adventure Begins, the Canadian cartoon. We didn't realise about that. Then somewhere along the line, we were like, hang on a minute, there's these two different versions of Highlander 2. So it's become 8.
Yeah. And like, normally we wouldn't bother to like do a separate episode for
a director's cut,
but it's just because it is Highlander 2, and this is meant that the Renegade version is meant to remove the Zeist stuff and add some extra scenes. It's a longer movie, which is kind of like just curious to like have another look and see what it's like. I mean, we may watch it and be like, well, it's hardly anything different. There's just like a car horn going whenever anyone says Zeist.
I'm up for that.
But yeah, we're gonna see how that works out. So yeah, I'm up for it.
Yeah, I'm up for it too.
I think especially after watching The Source, I'm just kind of like, fuck, I could yum up a bit of Highlander 2 with a spoon right now.
Yeah, just, I mean, a bit of Sean Connery back even. You know, he's not in those films much, but when he is...
I'm looking forward to seeing him turn that fan off again.
The whole of his life's work dedicated to that. Yeah. Okay, guys, well, thanks for listening. Sorry about all the poo chat. as always, please do get in touch. It's great to hear from you. If you've never gotten in touch before, maybe now's the time. Like maybe now just send us a quick tweet or something, because it's nice just to know that you're out there. So we're on Twitter at Bitter End Pod. We're on Facebook at Bitter End Pod. You can also email us. You've always been able to do this. We've just never bothered to read it out. It is bitterendpod@gmail.com.
Yeah. Let us know, you know, if you've got any thoughts about Highlander.
Yeah, about
Friday the 13th. About other franchises.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That you might think that we should dip our grubby little mitts into and have a little root round in. Holler at us.
Yeah, holler, holler. All right, guys, until next time, I'm Todd Jordan.
I'm Tom Denny.
Bye!
No!
No! No!